Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about great scientist Christian Huygens, someone I know about the Huygens wave packets, but really someone I really don't know too much about. So let's read the popular scientists, heroic scientists who are just miniature versions of science communicators waiting in waiting in history. I went through the history books and found out that the people of the past were exactly like me, only they weren't appreciated. Okay. One of the few scientists of the late 17th century with a stature approaching that of Newton. Oh, God. Christian Huygens, 1629-93, was famed for his invention of the pendulum clock, the first accurate clock, and such astronomical discoveries as Saturn's moons, Titan. Which is interesting that if Galileo invented the clock, I think it's a pendulum, fully clock rather than a pendulum timekeeping. Huygens lived at a time when science was just beginning to make a mark in the world. The greatest mind of Europe were caught up in the fever of scientific discovery. This is a time when Newton discovered gravity, and the basic rules that governed every movement of the universe. The time when Newton and Leibniz created the mathematics of calculus, and Hooke and Leeuwenhoek were discovered the world's microscopic life. Huygens was at the forefront of scientific revolution and lived at the hub of Northwest Europe. When Huygens was growing up as a boy in Netherlands, Galileo was being threatened with torture by papal authorities in Rome for suggesting that the Earth might not be the fixed centre of the universe. Absolutely not. God. Yet, not long after Huygens was writing, quote, "We shall be less apt to admire what this world calls great when we know there are a multitude of Earths inhabited and adorned as well as our own," which is, Bruno's viewpoint. So that sentence would not sound out of place coming from the mouth of an astronomer today. Like so many scientists of the day, Huygens' interest in were wide-ranging. Like Hooke and Leeuwenhoek, he made his own microscopes and made important discoveries of the microscopic world. Like Hooke and Newton, he made his own astronomical telescopes, which were technically superior to anything that had gone before. I like the Newtonian story of the telescope. It's a Newtonian telescope. With them, he discovered Saturn's moons, Titans, and the nature of Saturn's rings, mapped the surface of Mars for the first time, identified stars within the Orion Nebula, and discovered other nebula. So, Orion Nebula, if you look at the belt of Orion, one of those sort of stars is actually a beautiful nebula, and you can look inside it. Above all, though, Huygens is famous for two crucial ideas. First of all, he invented the pendulum clock and the world's first accurate timekeeper and explored all mathematicals associated with the pendulum, which led him and Hooke to the early prediction of a link between the elliptical orbits of planets and the inverse square law of gravity. Which he would talk about the pendulum that they took down to the West Indies and didn't work anymore, so it allowed Newton to think about gravity. Who was it? I wish I could remember. Huygens is also famous for the proposition of the wave theory of light known as Huygens' construction, outlined in the Treatise on Light in 1690, Huygens' wave functions. This gave a much better explanation than Newton's rifle particle theory for the way light reflected and refracted and predicted correctly. Light must be travel more slowly in denser material. Newton's status ensured Huygens' wave theory was neglected until the 19th century when Englishman Thomas, it's not status, it's English propaganda, Young conducted experiments that seemed, after all, to prove the wave-like nature of light. Now scientists accept light can be I'm so disgusted. Scientists now accept light can be both a particle and a wave. God, you want to poke quantum physicists in the face. Just say that. But Huygens has been well and truly vindicated. My little Archimedes. Born on the 14th of April, 1629, in a grand house of The Hague, Huygens grew up in a sophisticated environment. His father, Constantine, a diplomat of the Dutch Republic, as well as a poet, composer, and patron of the arts. There was always a string of distinguished visitors to the house in plen, including the English poet John Donne, Death, Do Not Be Afraid, or something like that. The painter Rembrandt, and most significantly, the great philosopher of the time, René Descartes. Oh, what a great person Descartes was. He had some swagger, you know, of all the other people who were things. Surrounded by such a galaxy of talents, the young Christian had plenty of role models. He developed a lifelong love of learning that spanned languages, art, music, law, engineering, and above all, mathematics. His father called him Mon Archimède, but it clearly wasn't all books. He became an excellent card player, a dab hand at billiard, and a top-class rider. Dab hand at billiard. This is a real debonair. At the age of 16, the young Huygens went to the University of Leiden for the famous Leiden jars, where he began to study mathematics and law in earnest. After 2 years at Leiden, he continued his studies at the University of Breda, and he was already beginning to make a name for himself, although he corresponded with the great French mathematician Martin Mersenne Primes. All the really basis of every time you unlock your car, it's the Mersenne Primes, and later his own elegant treatise on the major mathematical problems. Stargazing. Soon, however, Huygens' attentions turned to the skies. He began to develop better ways of grinding and polishing lenses for telescopes. It was not long before he was building some of the most powerful lenses for telescopes of the day. Using one of the telescopes, he discovered Saturn's moon Titan on March 1655. That year, he made his first trip to Paris, where he met some of the most distinguished thinkers of the day. Wouldn't that be fantastic? What a dream. Back in Holland the following year, Huygens was able to see the true nature of Saturn's rings, that are indeed a narrow band of rings around the planet and appear to change shape simply because we see them from Earth's different angles. Astronomers with inferior telescopes would not accept the description at first, but as telescopes improved, Huygens was seen as right. Working in astronomy demanded accurate timekeeping, and Huygens that year developed the pendulum clock. And that's really interesting. That is really interesting, that aspect. Society, Noam. This has actually got some fact in it. By now, Huygens' reputation was beginning to spread, and when he returned to Paris in 1660, he was something of a celebrity. He met the great French mathematician Blaise Pascal, became part of a circle of the best thinkers of the day, including Pascal, Cavi, and Sobre. Huygens wrote to his brother that there was, quote, a meeting every Tuesday where 20 or 30 illustrious men for their are found together. Quote, I never fail to go. In 1661, he went to England to find out more about the newly founded Royal Society, isn't it? We're going to do the same here. While in London, he showed the English scientists his telescopes. They were suitably impressed. Huygens, in turn, impressed with Hooke's air pump and Boyle's experiments with it, and soon began his own air pump experiments. 2 years later, Huygens was invited to join the Royal Society. Then, in 1666, is that the Great Fire in London? Huygens was invited to become the founding members of the French equivalent of the Royal Society, the Académie Royale des Sciences. He moved to Paris, very soon becoming the leading figure in the Academy, and in 1672 was the president, a unique honour for a Dutchman. Huygens remained in Paris for 15 years, and it proved to be one of the most productive periods of his life. It was during this time that he developed his theories of light and on the further development of the pendulum clock to try to create a timepiece accurate enough to use on ships and solve the problem of determining longitude. He developed a magic lantern, an ancestor of the film projectors, and an engine powered by gunpowder. He was also said to have taught mathematics to the later famous German Leibniz. Isn't that beautiful, Leibniz? Ill health. All the time, though, Huygens was constantly plagued by illness. In 1670, he had to be returned briefly to Holland, believing himself close to death. While lying ill in bed, he called for the English ambassador to give him his papers on mechanics, saying the Royal Society was an assembly of the closest wits in Christendom, and that he would sooner deposit his little labours in their hands than anywhere else. Huygens survived this time and returned to Paris, but his health became increasingly frail. By 1681, Huygens was so ill he was forced to give up his position in the French Academy and return to The Hague. He made a return visit to London in 1689 and met Newton there. Huygens and Newton both admired one another. Newton described Huygens as the most elegant mathematician of the age. Now, I don't know whether Newton was still an active scientist by that time. Lovely. But on many points, they did not agree. Newton thought light was made up of particles, but Huygens moved in waves. Even more crucial, Huygens was not convinced that Newton's theory of universal gravitation. Quote, I esteem his understanding and subtly highly, but consider they have been put to ill use in the greater part of his work. With the author studies things to little use when he builds on the improbable principle of attraction. Like Galileo, Huygens thought the idea of an invisible force just too fantasful. And, indeed, it is. And Descartes, he had an ether, an invisible force, and we sort of now understand it's space itself being twisted. The final frontier. Huygens returned to isolation in Holland again and spent much of his time contemplating the nature of the universe. His ideas accumulated in a book, Cosmotheros, which is translated into from Latin into English in 1861, the celestial worlds discovered, or conjectures concerning the inhabitants, plants, and productions of worlds in the planets. This extraordinary book was the first serious scientific work on the idea of a gigantic universe populated with so many suns and so many earths. How must our wonder of veneration be increased, he wrote, when we consider the prodigious distance and the multitude of stars. Even more startling were Huygens' discussions on the possibility of extraterrestrial life. Quote, this is almost getting like Tesla. It's interesting how the age without internet and stuff like that, the mind can actually be free. It's beautiful. Okay, a man that is of Copernicus's opinion that this Earth is ours, is a planet, carried around and enlightened by the sun like the rest of them, cannot but sometimes have fancy that it's not improbable that the rest of the planets out there have their dress and furniture, nay, their inhabitants too, as well as our Earth of ours, especially if he considers the latter discoveries made since Copernicus' time of the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. So, this book is much admired at the time, but has taken 3 centuries for scientists to get in a position where they can seriously investigate the possibility of extraterrestrial life. Well, I don't think our investigation of extraterrestrial life is all that serious, but I think we're finding there's a pretty violent and horrible universe out there. Cosmos was Huygens' last work, and it was published posthumously. In 1690, for Huygens, had been marked by rapidly deteriorating health and depression. He died after considerable suffering in March 1693. I like how he's depressed. And Newton got depressed. They all got bloody well depressed. Huygens and time. Galileo first alerted the world to the timekeeping possibilities of a swinging pendulum, but it was Huygens who successfully tried it with this escapement mechanism, so that as it ticked, it then went onto a clock. So now I'm just really trying to think of that Newton and the pendulum. I've really got to remember. The weight and gear that kept the clock hands moving to create the first pendulum clock he describes in Hologram. Oh, isn't that beautiful? Clocks using falling weights and gears were already in wide use, but they were wildly inaccurate, losing and gaining at least 15 minutes every day. Huygens' spinning clocks used accurate to within a minute or so a week. Huygens was not slow to realise the commercial potential, and within a year he had arranged for such clocks to be made under licence. In just a few years, the pendulum clock was being used for timekeeping across northern Europe. It was a crucial invention not only for the world in general, but all for the progress of science. And it's interesting about, you know, the sundials and local time, and you know, how this meant that sundials went away. And so your noon, high noon, would be as accurate as your local church to start with. But Huygens was not satisfied. He wanted to make a clock that kept perfect enough time to be carried aboard ships and used in making longitudinal measurements. Any gain or loss of time would lead to miscalculation of position. Very large pendulum clocks in scientific establishments could not be be just about accurate enough, but it was thoroughly impractical to take such a clock on a ship. So Huygens set about working out why smaller pendulum clocks were inaccurate. He discovered that the simple pendulum is not actually a perfect timekeeper after all. In fact, it completes smaller swings faster than bigger swings. So it's not isochronous keeping routine. Any variation in size of the swing would make the clock gain or lose time. Huygens realised that this was because the weight of the bob of the pendulum followed a circular path. Brilliantly, he showed the mathematically in his great book, Huygens, telling him that if the bob's path was a cycloid instead of a circle, it would be asynchronous and no matter what the length of the swing. So, I just try to think. So, a cycloid. Yeah, well, I really have to understand that. So, did they mean that? What is a cycloid? I really don't quite understand that. Huygens' inventive genius enabled him to go further and make pendulum swing cycloidally by spinning it a rigid pendulum rod on two cords, while swinging either way, was limited by two plates called a cycloidal check. Despite extensive sea trials, however, Huygens' cycloidal pendulum clocks never quite worked in practice. There was another 100 years before English clockmaker George Harrison made a sufficiently accurate and robust chronometer to use at sea and solve the longitude problems. But Captain Cook just used fantastic astronomy to get across that. But if the clock itself was not a total success, Huygens' theoretical work on the milestone for science, playing a key part to understanding the centrifugal force, was also laid the groundwork for Newton's law of motions by showing how an object could travel in a straight line unless pulled to a curved part by some other force. But in 1675, I think it's Richter's pendulum was the problem, and how they... Oh, that was really fascinating. In 1675, Huygens introduced another great innovation in timekeeping, the spiral balance spring. Just as swinging pendulum regulates the motion of the clock, so the spiral balance regulates the balance wheel in a watch. The balance wheel is a finely balanced wheel that rotates and keeps a watch mechanism operating. The spiral balance spring controlled the rotation so well that watches could keep time within a day per year. Within a few years, watches were being carried by gentlemen pockets across Europe. Well, yeah, I suppose that might be. And then Anton van Leeuwenhoek was all, just stop that and continue soon after. That's such a nice book. What a nice man. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things. Understand them and tell others. Thanks for listening.